It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why there is a dead goat in my backyard, but the Cubs won! So, you know.
I'm not convinced the two are related, but...
Well, you know, I'll take it.
Okay.
As long as you help me get rid of the body, we can call it whatever you like.
I'll be glad to help.
All right. Yeah. So, were you watching?
Yes. Yep.
I wondered, because I was like, I said today, I was like, oh, I bet William will want to talk about it, because he's a big baseball fan. And I was like, well, he's a big fan of the concept of baseball. I don't know if he specifically follows games or, like, has favorite teams.
You are correct. I'm a fan of baseball, the game. I generally find professional baseball to be kind of a perversion of the, you know, the wonderful purity I usually see in the game. But I do sometimes, I mean... It's baseball, so I'll watch sometimes, or I'll just go out to MLB.com and see what the standings are while the season's going on. And I do like the Chicago teams. I root for the Cubs and the White Sox. I prefer the White Sox if they're ever playing each other, but that's almost never. So I root for the Chicago teams. You know, I'm always... anxious to find out if the Chicago teams made it into the playoffs and so on. And so the Cubs, not only did they make it to the World Series, but, you know, they won more than 100 games in the season, which is not an easy thing. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. A lot of times nobody breaks 100 wins, but they did. So not only did they win the World Series, but, I mean, they really deserved
it. It was a hell of a year to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, because the thing about baseball, and this is one of the things I love about it, is you can be a kind of a mediocre team and still win the World Series, because in the playoffs there's something called the wild card, and you still have to do pretty well in your season, but not super well, and you can compete for the wild card spot and then somehow by some miracle make it through the playoffs and get to the series and actually win. So it's possible for the team that wins the World Series to, on paper and by stats, not actually be the best team, yet they won the championship. To me, that's cool.
Yeah.
But this time, really, by all accounts, the best team won. And won in the... I mean, they had to win the last three games in a row. They took it clear to the seventh game.
And the seventh game went for 84 hours.
An extra inning. They were ahead.
Game breaks.
They were ahead until... We didn't actually cut into the game until the fifth inning, and they were already up by four or something.
Yeah, they were 5-1, and supposedly, this is what I get via my boss, who's not a huge fan, but is married to a kid who, like, grew up in a Cubs onesie kind of thing.
Okay.
So, according to her, so whoever was pitching at that point got one hit from somebody, or somebody got one hit off of him, and walked somebody because of a shitty umpire. And apparently those things were enough that the coach took him out. And apparently the internet was kind of pissed when this happened. But the other part, supposedly, is so they bring in a new pitcher. They also bring in a new catcher. And the catcher is the oldest guy on the team, and he's been there forever, and this is literally his last game.
Yeah, he retired.
And then something happens, and they screw it up, and now it's 5-3. But then she said he got up to bat and hit a home run.
Yeah.
Which she's like, I don't know if this is common for him or what.
The game was tied, and like right at the moment where you don't want that to happen. And we couldn't believe it. I mean, like I said, we came in about the fifth inning and the Cubs were ahead, and we thought, all right, well, you know, winning three in a row, the last three games of the series, that's not a very common thing either to happen. And we were happy about it, and we thought, you know, we thought it was not going to be particularly exciting, but it would be historic. Mm-hmm. And then they tied up the game. And emotionally, it was very taxing. And, and like you pointed out, I'm a fan of baseball more than I'm a fan of professional baseball. But here's the thing about it, and this is why it was such a big deal. And my wife was really into it too, and she's not a particular fan even of the game of baseball. I mean, she's, you know, she enjoys, like, we've watched Ken Burns' documentary on baseball, which is excellent, by the way. I encourage everyone to see it. And she liked that and stuff. But
much better than Nick Burns.
But she was probably more excited about this game than I was.
Your company's computer guy.
She was probably more excited about this game than I was, because for her it became symbolic, you know. Mm-hmm. They haven't won a championship, you know, in 108 years or whatever it is. And that's not just the longest dry spell in baseball. It's probably the longest dry spell in sports. So for her, that kind of became symbolic of just a lot of things, you know. It's like of someone who just tries and tries and tries and tries and tries, and they just put their heart into it every time, and they're disappointed every time, but they just don't give up. And so she just really wanted them to win so bad.
I don't care about any of that shit. Any of the stuff you've said the whole time we've been here. Well, okay, a little bit that last one. But for me, it is the historical nature of it. And it's the, I feel like I'm living through haunted house legends, and then we proved the ghost was there, you know, which never happens.
Right.
So, I mean, and it's not like, I mean, because it's not like we can say clearly it was a curse now or anything like that, but it's just like, literally, this is a legend that even I grew up with.
Yeah, yeah.
And people, their whole lives have been huge fans of a team that's never managed this.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, hell, I've read multiple fantasy short stories involving the curse and, like, where it really came from and stuff like that. I mean, this is... And then, you know, I know it's not... We're not proving anything, but it feels like that. I'm like, and you never get to hear the end of a ghost story.
No,
you know?
That's right.
Not the real end, so...
It was very emotional. I mean, it was very... I don't know. It's hard not to get caught up in it. Like I said, even my wife was completely absorbed by the drama of it. You know, the historical weight of it. And I went to a Cubs game, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, because we used to work for a company that was based in Chicago, and that was my opportunity to go to some professional ball games. I did want to go to a Cubs game, and I wanted to go to a Sox game, and I was able to go to those, both of those. And
you were sober. That I can't even imagine. Baseball is boring.
No, it isn't. I love baseball. I love watching. And again, I like watching professional baseball too, but not nearly as much as
that. Stuff that happens while they're playing is interesting, arguably. But there's such huge gaps.
Yeah, but there are still things happening. I mean, like,
yeah, but there's such weird ass cheesy.
Okay, well, like for a person who's into the game, you. I mean, that the time between pitches is full of so much stuff, and you're thinking about it.
No, that's when they have, like, the local Boy Scout troop come up and...
No. I mean, like between pitches, you know, I'm talking to my wife about, all right, this is what this guy's probably going to pitch right now because of this, you know, or, okay, they're going to bunt now, but I don't know if they will because of this. I mean, there's just all kinds of things that you can think about and talk about.
Or you can be drunk. I've been to two baseball games. One was one way, one was the other. I know where.
Now, it's also exciting because the farm team for the Cubs is in Iowa, in Des Moines, where I grew up. So I went to Iowa Cubs games, and sometimes, you know...
What are they called?
The Iowa Cubs.
Okay. Well, sometimes they have different...
That's teams. Right. They were the Iowa Oaks for a while, but I don't think they were a Cubs farm team at that time.
Here we have the Hawks, and then we have the Little Hawks, but I'm like, you're already starting with Cubs. So... What was the Ursine Zygotes of Des Moines?
Well, I don't remember.
Oh, that could be a good.
I don't remember when Des Moines. I don't remember when Des Moines team became the farm team, because they were the Iowa Oaks for a long time, and they might have been the Cubs. I don't know if they were the, like, I don't know who they were a farm team for at that time, or if they were a farm team for anyone. But Right now, they're the Cubs farm team. So what that means, if people don't know, is you get promoted to the majors from the Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa team, or you can also get demoted from the majors that way. Now, there's another farm team in Iowa. There might be more than one, but I know the Cedar Rapids Colonels, which is near us, is a farm team for, last I knew, they were a farm team for the Anaheim Angels.
Okay.
So it's kind of exciting.
Not the Anaheim Colonels.
No. So it's kind of exciting for Iowa that the Cubs won also.
It'd be cool if they were a farm team for a team that was also called the Colonels, but spelled it like the military.
Like
rank.
C,
yeah. Yeah. The Colonels, the farm team for the Colonels. Can you hear?
No, so yeah, it was an exciting night. My wife was very nervous and wasn't sure it was going to happen, but then it did, so it was very exciting.
We didn't watch. I think twice I flipped over to see what it was. And then, so I remember top of the fourth and top of the fifth, I think I saw the score, and that was it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to... You know, I would feel bad, but there's no way... We're the podcast that talks the most about the Cubs winning the World Series before
even getting started.
Then,
right.
Yeah, we're definitely not the worst of that. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that carefully keeps its meats and its vegetables separated to avoid cross-contamination.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
I'm Tony, also known as Meats.
And I'm William, and I forgot again to look... number it was.
Oh my God.
What is wrong with me lately?
So fired.
This is like the second time in 2 or 3 weeks.
Severely reduced pay for everyone.
Is it 295 now?
I would say that. I think it's 295.
That makes sense. That's
so you'll be meats and you'll be veg. So on Tuesday when NeuroDuck and I were going to gaming. We always have, you know, what do you want for supper? And we text back and forth because neither of us ever cares or whatever. But this time she said, how about Jimmy Jack's? Which I always find interesting. Both she and her wife like Jimmy Jack's, which has exactly one vegetarian option on the menu. It's a portobello sandwich, but apparently it's good.
Okay.
The sides are also good. I don't know. So, anyway, she orders portobello dinner with some sides. I get the fatty brisket. They have lean brisket and fatty brisket. And the fatty brisket is way tastier, so that's what I get. So I got a fatty brisket meal with some sides. This is what we ordered. I ordered ahead of time, because if you order, you're going to sit there for 10, 15 minutes, and we just like to sort of swing in. So I ordered ahead of time. They tell me, okay, your order number is 10. Remember that when you show up, your to-go number is 10. I'm like, okay, no problem. So I go, pick up NeuroDuck, we go to Jimmy Jack's, go inside, and I say, we're here to get to-go order number 10. He's like, hold on a sec. He looks and he says, Porto and a fatty? And I said, I feel like you just insulted me, but yes, that's our order. And NeuroDuck immediately says, that could be our road trip name, Porto and Fatty. And I decided it worked better with Porto and the fatty. And I'm like, yeah, we could drive around and, like, solve mysteries.
You're right, that
stuff.
Is better. That's much better. Good job.
So, I was telling this story this morning, and my boss is like, you have to tell that on the podcast. I was like, oh, no. I'm going to do that. Yeah, so now we're Porto and the Fatty, which I'm pretty sure is the title of this episode.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it.
As much as I enjoyed Ursine Zygotes, I feel like Porto and the Fatty has to... Like, really, like, it sounds like a 1970s action show in a language that was almost English, like an Esperanto.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it
yeah.
was like an Esperanto language show.
I got you.
That would have been...
I'm with you.
For those of you just joining us...
But did you finish your story?
That was the end of Porto and the Fatty.
Oh. I thought you were going to say something about how they put him in the same container and that was bad.
No, it was all fine. It was literally just because he called me...
Okay.
Porto and a Fatty.
All right.
And it was just... I mean... Fatty has like three or four different definitions already.
Sure.
I don't know what it was, but it just quite literally, I thought he was like Porto and a fat, and I was like, that is rude. Like, probably was like half a second in my brain, but that half second was like, that is rude. He called me a fatty. What was that first part? Or, oh, it's probably the two things we ordered because I had fatty brisket. Okay, hey, this will be funny to share.
Yeah, right.
Let's do that. That was my brain in that half a second.
Sounds like someone's probably a delivery
person.
Oh, I didn't.
Addie's gonna get the door.
Hey, will you guys like the lawn
mower? Oh, it's not a delivery. Yeah, but I don't have any cash is the problem. And I'm not going, my wife just left and she's got the only working ATM card. So, is your phone fixed?
Nope.
All right. Can you come back like Monday? Okay, because we totally need leaves done, but I don't have any money to pay you.
Alright.
He probably needs cash right now, dude.
Hello?
Hello? You're doing it here.
I'm sorry?
Your delivery is here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, we're here, alright. We'll meet you at the door. I forgot they do that. This is the thing Uncle Son does. They're like scared to approach the house or something.
Thank you.
It's always weird. Thank you. I forgot Uncle Son does that. They don't come to the door. They call and tell you that your order is here. And then they come to the door. It's very weird.
It's polite, I suppose.
And it used to be that the same guy would always do it, and he always said it the same way. He said, "Your order has arrived," and he said it just like that every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started to be the line. Anyway, so yeah, no, not pour it on the fatty. So I should explain to people who are just tuning in. It's too late. We're not giving you. If you don't know the spiel of how the show works by now, A, it doesn't matter, and B, yes, you do. I refuse to believe we get new listeners.
Well, then listen to a previous episode.
Also.
If you're that curious.
Guess.
Or look at the about on the webpage.
Also works. There's so many options.
Yeah.
Live your life.
It doesn't really matter. Do they have to know? They'll just listen and figure it out.
I usually don't remember. So, how was your week?
Well, the Cubs won the World Series.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Halloween. You like Halloween.
I love Halloween. You know, it's been a great week. Fall-wise, the colors driving over here.
Still a little wonky, though.
That's the only problem. Is it's so warm?
Yeah.
There was kind of a positive side effect of that, though, was that when you went out walking in the woods, like we like to do in the fall. Well, we like to do it all the time, but especially in the fall.
Dressed up as clowns.
The fall smell, like the fall leaf smell, is stronger.
Mm.
Like when it's colder out. The
scent
doesn't hang in the air as much, and also, you know, your nose gets cold, and so you can't smell as well. But with the warmer temperatures and it's a little more humid, that smell is in the air, and that's kind of pleasant. But it's still not as nice. And when there's a crisp breeze or it's nice and cold,
when it's cold, I just roll up the leaves, stick one in the east nostril, it smells for a long time. You change them every hour or so.
But it's been gorgeous outside in terms of the leaves and we decorated for Halloween we always decorate like in September. So we've been, and so Halloween is like a several week thing for us. And so when Halloween finally came, we were really ready for it. And we didn't do anything with anyone else. It was just the two of us, but it was nice. It's kind of our, you know, my wife and I are common law married, really, but so Halloween is kind of our unofficial, not quite real anniversary.
Okay.
So that was kind of part of it, and so that was nice. So yeah, it's been a good week, and then of course then there was the Cubs won, and also today a new Wonder Woman trailer is out.
I didn't hear about that. I know I'm gonna see it because it's going to be one of the previews attached to Doctor Strange, which I'm going to go see tomorrow night.
Yeah. And it's a really good.
Is it good?
It's a really good trailer. Yeah, really good.
Are you gonna go see Doctor Strange?
Probably not. Probably not.
I'm kind of excited. I don't know entirely why, because it's not like I have a lot of history with it. I've always liked what little I knew about the character. And I don't know why. I think because I like fantasy more than I like the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to like the superheroes whose powers are I'm a magician.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, Cumberbatch is awesome.
I mean, we might, but I don't know.
The guy who... I really just have to suck it up and learn to start pronouncing his name. But the other male lead in it, I don't think he's the villain, but it's hard to tell from the trailers. He was the guy who played the operative in Serenity. He's in everything right now. He's an incredible actor. His name is something I can't pronounce. Starts with a CH, I believe.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, I love him, too. I'm excited to see him in this. Jazz, tell us what his name is.
What about your week?
Lots of things, I think. Well, I went to Icon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That did not pan out well.
Why?
It's just really boring. I didn't do anything there. Mm. And at first I thought it was just me not going to stuff, but then my friends who actually went to stuff were like, yeah, it just wasn't a great year. One of the highlights for the con, I think, although, again, didn't go to it, is author Gene Wolfe, who's been around for decades, hugely famous and big deal, and like one of Neil Gaiman's favorite authors, had a reading of one of his books at the con. But he wasn't a guest of honor or anything. He just was there.
Oh.
How weird was that?
Yeah.
But, no, the only fun things for me at all about going to the con was I got to have lunch and dinner with a couple of my gaming group friends, which, you know, we seldom get together. That's not gaming, so that was fun to just hang out. And discovered Cappy's Pizza up in Cedar Rapids, which was a nice pizza place. Then there was Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up with 7 trick-or-treaters, which was an interesting mix, because there were the 2 neighbor children, which we got candy that specifically suited them, because we hadn't gotten any candy, and the night before we had dinner with them. And so we asked both of them, we're like, we don't have our candy yet. If we were going to get just one kind, what would you like us to get?
Mm-hmm.
And the 6-year-old, the boy, said Tic Tacs.
Tic Tacs?
Yes. And the older one, the girl, the 8-year-old, said Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Now, we didn't think Tic Tacs would work, so he had switched over to Dum Dums, but because they don't sell Halloween ones. But Trish just got a few of them, and she's like, we'll be able to give them to him here. So we got their favorites. So anyway, they were trick-or-treating. Also, 4 children with their mother that I did not recognize, that I think Marcia said they just moved in down the street. And they were just, like, terrified because they were brand new. And there's 2 older boys and then 2 younger girls. And the youngest girl, both of the girls were dressed as Elsa from Frozen. And the youngest one, her dress lit up and sung the song.
Oh, wow.
She pushed a button on it. But she's just looking at me, just terrified, because I'm this huge guy. And the boys seemed okay, but one of them, I think, was really nervous. Because one was dressed as Iron Man, and one was in some sort of black robe with, like, a hood and stuff and this weird necklace or whatever. And so I said, when I got up there, I'm like, okay, guys, but you got to tell me what you are before I give you the candy. And so the one said Iron Man. But that one I said, and what are you dressed as? And he said, Michael. And I'm pausing. I'm like, Michael Myers? He doesn't look like Michael Myers. And I was like, you're dressed up as Michael? And he said, yeah. And I was like, well, you look like a great Michael. But I think he was just, like, nervous. I think his name probably was Michael.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, any famous Michael I could think of, I'm like, he doesn't look like him.
What the neighbor kids dress up as?
Interesting. I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, I am too, because you didn't say.
The 6-year-old, Spider-Man, cool, whatever.
Yeah.
The 8-year-old, Harley Quinn.
Okay.
Which I was excited about a little bit, because I'm like, whoa, this is getting out there a little bit. This is a little... But then I find out, not who I think of as Harley Quinn.
Okay.
There's a TV show, a cartoon TV show, I believe called DC
Superhero Girls.
Oh, Superhero Girls. There we go. That is a very targeted at girls one, in which there is a Harley Quinn who appears to just not have the same backstory and is solidly just a hero.
That's right.
And that's who she was dressing as.
Okay. Superhero girls, Harley Quinn.
Exactly, exactly. But her father did make her her own hammer.
Oh, okay.
That was about as tall as her, and that was kind of awesome. But, and then I bring this up because the other trick-or-treater we had, he was the first one to show up, and he was actually earlier than I thought trick-or-treating started, but I'm not positive. But, I mean, he was a kid. It was totally fine, too. But he was I mean, his clothes were unremarkable, and he had a mask on that was sort of hard to... It was vaguely human, but, like, with harder angles. I wasn't really sure. You know, it was starting to get dark. So I said, he said, trick-or-treat. And I said, what are you dressed as? And he said, oh. Oh, okay. So I just gave him a piece of candy. But that was it. We didn't do any more there. But I bring this up because... Last night, mm-hmm. Wednesday night,
mm-hmm.
November 2nd,
mm-hmm.
we're in there watching a movie, which I'll tell you about in a little bit here, and there's a knock at the door.
Okay.
It's too early for the delivery guy, because I just placed the order, and I don't know what it is, something about the sound, the knock, or something, I was like, that's a kid. That's one of the neighbor kids.
Okay.
And so I go to the door, and sure enough, it is the oldest one, the 8-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and she says, hi. And she says, do you have any more Reese's Peanut Butter Cups or Tic Tacs? And I said, oh, no. You are not trying to trick-or-treat on November 2nd, young lady. And she said, do you have any more? I said, yes, we do, and I'm not giving them to you. And she said, okay. And I said, do your parents know you're doing this? And she said, yes. And I said, all right, then. No. And she's like, just asking, and went home. I'm suspicious.
Yeah, of course, sure.
And it's not a... I mean, it's fine.
You yeah, know? Yeah, right.
She was polite.
Yes, yes.
She didn't push.
No.
That was fine. But I'm still like, you know, let's... So I text her mom. I'm like, just so you know... By the way, I text her mom specifically because her dad frequently doesn't respond to texts, so this isn't a weird, I think the mom is in charge thing. Although, in that family, she is, but... Anyway, I text the mom, and I'm like, just so you know, your daughter came over trying to get more candy. And she's like, I'm not even home right now, and I know nothing about this.
But she said she did.
And she's, but I said, just so you know, she said her parents knew.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, maybe Kirk knew. I'm like, yeah. It might have. And I'm like, it's not a big deal. She was polite. It's fine. Didn't give her any. But I just thought you should be in the loop.
Yeah.
So this morning, when we're going to work, she tells us, and here's apparently how it went down.
Okay.
So, we've discussed before the Switch.
Yes.
And these kids have the Switch, who's already been there. I don't know what they got from the Switch, but they're now down to X pieces of candy they were allowed to keep.
Right.
Each of them. I don't even know how many it is. Apparently, her little brother's candy is lasting longer.
Okay.
And she's not happy about that.
Yeah.
And she said, just blue skying here, in a room where her father was, maybe Trish and Tony still have some, and we could go ask if we could have some of that. And their father said, no.
Okay.
I'm sure they don't have any. And no, you can't go and ask.
Because it really kind of defeats the whole Switch thing if you can just go get some
well,
more.
Well, and it's a whole thing. I mean,
yeah, right.
And the brother then has less.
Yeah, right.
There's just the whole lesson of we don't beg candy from our neighbors except that one day of the year.
Right.
You know, this kind
right.
Maybe in December if you're wassailing, but still. And who wassails? Come on. All right, anyway. So he said no.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I'm going to go do it anyway. And he, I assume, got to the edge of his chair, leaned forward, getting ready for the fight, but then paused, and this part is his story, and realized, one, he thought we were out.
Okay.
Two, it's us, so it's not like it's dangerous for her to go,
right.
Like that we'll be super pissed or anything.
Right.
And three, he was confident, correctly so, that we wouldn't give her any. So he decided he was picking his battles here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let her go do it, which is totally fine, which, and I think he made a wide decision.
Which means technically she was telling the truth when she said
I know, yeah, her and she knew. Did. She did, technically. Yeah, he did. He did. In fact, he told me not to. Here I am. But I thought about it, and I'm just like, I mean, part of it was I was pissy. I'm always pissy when they come to the door, especially when she comes to the door, because she knows she never comes to our door with a decent reason. And she knows, because I know the look she gets on her face when she's trying to be cute because she feels guilty about something bad she did, and she has it every damn time I open that door. It's always knock, 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 bang, 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 bang. Can we pet Addie? You know, the cat we've never, ever been allowed to pet because you say he'll claw us? Can we pet it? No, you can't. But get that. And I'm always pissed because I don't like getting up and coming in from there. And most of the time, let's be honest here, having to put on pants. And so I'm always a little pissed anyway. But let's just assume for a moment that I'm happy with this. That I'm like, thank goodness we had these extra Reese's peanut butter cups. They were driving me crazy. I didn't know what to do with them. You're here, my savior. Let's assume for a second that was a real thing. She's still not getting them. We're going back to her house, and I'm asking her parents if it's okay to give them to her.
Yeah, right,
her.
Right.
And they're going to say no, because we just had this conversation.
Right.
Like, there's no planet on which I give children that I am not currently the adult in charge of candy without explicit permission from
the
parents,
parents. Of course.
Maybe that makes me a weirdo.
No, no.
And it should be noted that if I'm babysitting them for a day, I may give them candy. But when I'm not currently in charge of them,
sure,
I got to run that shit by the people who are.
I think that's sensible.
So, but she doesn't know that. So, yeah. I was just like, I think she keeps hoping Trish will answer the door. Trish doesn't answer the door. Anyway, a couple other. I got to hurry now because it took so much time. But that was the one I, Porto and the Fatty and the neighbor kid coming to Trick or Treat on November 2nd were my big stories. Saw two movies I'd like to speak of.
Okay.
But before I get to those, we did game again this weekend, or this week. It was pretty fun. We are now officially into territory that wasn't pre-written in a book. Our GM is making this stuff up.
Oh.
Not a lot happened last time, but it was more role-play. I'm getting a good sense of the character now. And he's very dumb.
Your character.
Yes. Which is true mechanically as well. His intelligence is very low.
You're playing a male?
Yes. I'm playing a male half-orc. These, for some reason with the D&D characters, I got very specific images in my head.
Okay.
So when I was coming up with my concepts, of which I came up with like 12 for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
They were specifically male or female already.
Okay, I gotcha.
And some of them, and this one happened to be a male one. But he's very dumb, and, but he's, remember, he's trying to be a good guy, and so, but he also has, I mean, it's built into his character, both into his background and in some of his stats, he's incredibly uncouth and doesn't give a damn for that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But he's trying to be nice, and he's, but he's very naive and stuff. So, like, most of what happened in this adventure is a random guy approached me on the street and said, hey, you hang out with so-and-so, right? Which was a different character.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. And they said, we've been trying to get her. She's wanted for murder up in the city. Here's the wanted poster for it.
Mm-hmm.
And me going, really? That's terrible, because that's a bad thing. And them saying, can you, like, lead her somewhere and we'll ambush her and stuff? Can you bring her to us? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And they said, okay, and they paid me. And they left. Now, my plan is to go talk to her.
Sure.
And if...
get her side.
And if I believe this is not true, which it doesn't feel right, but...
okay.
Then we're just going to go and kick those guys' ass because they're clearly lying.
Right, right.
If she is, then I'm going to help bring her to justice, probably. But, I mean, that's the whole thing. I was like, okay, we'll just go along with this because I'll figure it out, and then we'll go...
yeah.
And it didn't end up quite working that way. But, I mean, that's become my thing now, is I'm just like, all right. That seems like the right thing to do. Let's go do it. And then later we'll finish it. But still desperately committed to the greater good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was fun to play. But anyway, Movies. Didn't watch TV to speak of that was of interest, so I won't talk about that. Movies. First one, this is the important one, is a documentary. It is on Amazon Prime. I highly recommend it to comedy folks, because I love a lot of comedy documentaries. This one is very specific, but it is very enjoyable. It is called Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
Okay.
And it is the easy of a bit. So you remember when he got kicked out of NBC?
Yes.
With $20 million, but, you know, kicked out all the Tonight Show stuff, and they sent him away. And part of that thing, and part of the reason there was a small gap between that and him getting the show on TBS, is it was built in the contract for the next 6 months he couldn't be on TV.
Hmm.
Built into the finalizing agreement. So during that time, he went on the road and did a live show.
Okay.
And this is a documentary about that time.
Hmm.
It's very funny. It's very cool. It has a lot of the sort of backstage, behind-the-scenes aspects of comedy, which Trish and I adore.
Mm-hmm.
It is also, for Trish, it was very enlightening. For me, it wasn't, because I already knew this. Conan O'Brien has a lot of issues. Conan O'Brien has a lot of anxiety issues, mm-hmm. and compulsion issues and stuff like that. He's a very, very tense person. And this shows that.
Mm.
And I had heard interviews and heard him talk and stuff outside of, like, a performance. So I had already had that enlightening moment. But for her, it was this is very emblematic of it.
Mm.
And him, I mean, especially in this case, because he's dealing with a lot of the issues of having been mad before at this, at NBC.
Right, right.
But then he really enjoys this tour. And within the tour, you get a lot of this sense that he craves the attention of the fans, and it also drives him nuts, and he really wants to get away from it. And so it's very interesting, but it's also very funny. It has a lot of celebrity cameos, some of which just aren't mentioned. Because there are scenes that are, like, at a party or something, and you just see in the background, you're like, that person's famous.
Yeah.
Like there was one that was like a meet and greet thing, and Megan Mullally and Nick Offerman were there in the background, but they didn't label them or anything, because all he did is like, hey, and they're like, hey, good show, and then they just stood in the back while everybody else was fawning and freaking out and wanting signatures and stuff. But then there's like weird ones, because like Kristen Schaal, she got to meet him, but apparently they didn't know each other.
Oh.
She literally was just like a fan. Like, she had him sign something, and she gave him this thing she had crocheted or whatever, and took a picture, and that was it. But with her, presumably as her guest for the evening, or date, or the person, is Reggie Watts, who's also a comedian that we know well and really like. Just not mentioned. He doesn't speak. He just was there with her, and they were filming, and so he was.
Right.
So there's a lot of moments like that that are kind of fun. So I would highly recommend that. That one was good. This next one I'm still uncertain about. Because I don't know if it's good or not. It's a 2009 movie, also available on Amazon Prime for free. So I encourage folks, if I'm encouraging, you'd see it, which I haven't decided yet if I am. Titled Scream of the Bikini. It is...
Bikinis don't have mouths.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet I must scream. Sorry. It is a parody. It is a spoof, as it were, of 1960s Euro spy films.
Because we need those. We need spoofs of those.
Well, it can be fun. This is the thing. A spoof of this nature can be really cool in very different ways.
I suppose.
A great example that I've talked about before on here, Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You're a huge
movie.
Fan of that, yeah.
It is a very dry satire of those types of movies, played very seriously.
Okay.
In a completely other direction, you have, like, Zucker Brothers, like Airplane.
Okay.
Airplane was a parody of specific kinds of
like movies. Disaster movies.
Yes, at the time. I mean, it was a little more contemporary, but at the same time, it was a wacky parody. It was an episode of The Simpsons. It was
you know,
joke a minute, and we didn't really worry about consistency or continuity. Or I mean, even within our illusion of
one could argue that's where The Simpsons came from.
Yeah, But you can see those are essentially parodying film types in the same way, but they're vastly different.
Sure, sure.
Here's the thing with Scream of the Bikini. It can't decide which of those kinds it is.
Mm.
And it switches it up a lot. It's also very low budget. It is very sexist, ironically, but just heavily. I mean, the whole... It's a spy thriller, and our two protagonists are these two supermodels slash bounty hunters.
Mm.
And they are played... I don't want to say stupid, because that's not... But very vapid.
Mm.
But it's intentional. I mean, it's very much a message.
Mm.
But it's just... It's, you know, it's like how Mark Millar says that his stuff is ironic, and you're like, yeah, but you're doing so much of it. So I'm a little... Good. But there's two reasons why I feel like I should recommend this film. One is... I feel like if I was going to make a parody film of this nature, this would be about as good as I could do. I don't mean this is as good as I would want it to be.
Yeah.
I would want it to be better than this.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is probably the level I would produce. To the degree that at a certain point in the film, while watching it, it's not uncommon for me in a really bad movie or a movie that's supposed to be out or whatever to start sort of Mystery Science Theatering it myself.
Sure, yep.
Sometimes out loud, sometimes not.
Yeah.
This one, I very specifically instead was doing director commentary, like explaining why certain scenes didn't work and why certain...
I do that.
Throughout the whole thing. Because I really felt like this is something that I would have shot for better, but this is probably what I would have... ended up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other reason is there's a cameo, a very woodenly acted on purpose cameo of Walter Koenig and his wife. Not playing themselves, playing a Mr. and Mrs. Chesterfield. And I have tremendous respect for Walter Koenig.
Like his actual wife?
Yeah, well that's the... Here's the thing. There's a scene, and it's at a hotel, and it's to open that as a location. So the initial scene, you're in the lobby, and there's a wealthy husband and wife guests who are just checking out and leaving. And so they talk about how much they like the hotel, and then they're off to Rome, which he gestures with his whole arm like this and stuff. But it's clearly Walter Koenig. And then this other...
We're talking about the guy who plays Chekhov in the original Star Trek series, right?
Bester in Babylon 5, yes.
Okay.
And very prolific author, playwright.
Very talented guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of him, but as the years go on, I just become more of a fan of him. And he's playing... I mean, he's made up such that he almost looks corpse-like. And, like, seriously, yeah, he gestures with, like, without bending his elbows and stuff. It's patently ridiculous and on purpose, clearly. And I don't recognize the woman, but there's a Mrs. He's Mr. Chesterfield, there's Mrs. Chesterfield. I don't recognize her. I assume it doesn't... I was like, looking, I'm like, is she famous too? Because this is never explained.
Okay.
And then they're done, and it's it. And actually, the guy they were talking to is famous, but he's famous for being in shitty movies, so it didn't really count. But so then the credits roll, and it says, Mr. Chesterfield as himself... Mrs. Chesterfield, and it has an actress's name. I'm like, this is clever. For a variety of reasons. And clearly she wasn't anybody. But then later I decided to look it up on IMDb.
Because
I'm just like... And it has him listed as being in it. It has no part listed at all. But I look up the woman playing Mrs. Chesterfield, and it's his wife.
His
real life wife.
That's very clever.
She has a different last name and stuff, but yeah, that was his wife.
That's very clever.
But so I'm like, he saw something in the... Because, I mean, it can't have been for a paycheck. Because I was actually looking... He's in a shit ton of things, too.
Well,
and I'm guessing a lot of them are fairly mediocre.
He likes to help projects. Like, I mean, he...
Is that a thing? I guess I didn't...
Oh, well, one of the big things he does is people who are making, like, low-budget Star Trek stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He'll often be in that stuff.
A lot of credits in those.
He likes to help people with that stuff.
And this, because there's always the thing, because you can see Christopher Walken in the lamest shit ever, because he always needs to be working.
Mm.
It's not because he needs the money. It's not because he respects all the projects. He wants to be working.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this couldn't have been more than an hour and a half out of your life.
He just did it for kicks, probably.
I'm like, I was checking. I was like, is there somebody else with the last name Koenig somewhere in this?
I think credit? He just likes, I mean, you know, he probably knows someone or someone knows someone. They said, hey, will you do this? And, from what I can tell, I mean, first, he does the Star Trek stuff because I think he believes in it.
I think
George Takei is a little like that, too. It's like, even if they're not going to get paid very much or whatever, I think they believe in it. Yeah. But my understanding is that he'll do something on a lark. I mean, you know, it's just fun.
Which this must have.
Yeah.
Because it was just so surreal. Like, and him giving such an excellent, terrible performance. I think he talks about like I wasn't really listening to his lines because I was just like, seriously. But something about how floofy the pillows were and stuff, and so smooshy. And
there was a question I wanted to ask you about horror movies.
Okay.
So.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so you know I'm not a fan of horror movies, but my wife is, and she will watch movies sometimes while I'm here, like that I don't want to watch. But
I'm going to do a lot this weekend.
Around Halloween, you know. I'm willing to watch some things, just kind of in the spirit of it or whatever.
My wife gets into that. She doesn't like horror movies, but around Halloween, she frequently wants to see a scary movie.
Sure. This is really the first year. I mean, you know, we've been together for like almost 18 years now, and this is really the first year where we just sat in front of Netflix and just picked stuff to watch.
Okay.
And there's been a lot of things. I don't even remember the names of them all, but so I'm getting a definite pattern to plots.
Okay.
And it seems like a lot of these plots are recycled, and I'm a little surprised sometimes because I start to wonder, since they're recycling all these like there's twists and stuff in them, but they're the same twists a lot of times. And sometimes it's not even what I would call a twist. It's like the person making the movie has watched a lot of horror movies, and they know that some dramatic thing happens at the end, but they don't quite get what a twist is, so they just put a dramatic thing at the end because they don't understand what a twist is. You know what I mean? Like, you know exactly what I'm saying.
I absolutely do.
So what's that about? I mean, I have a theory, though, too, about why this is.
Okay, give me a theory.
Okay, so... Oh,
no, sorry,
So what it looks like is that it seems like the horror genre attracts a disproportionate number of people who enjoy the genre, but they don't fully understand it. Like they don't like I say, they don't really know what a twist is,
okay.
Or they don't really know what all of the narrative pieces to a good horror movie are. But they're convinced they can make one. Somehow. Mm-hmm. And so I formed this really half-baked theory, and I wanted to bounce it off you, because I started to think, maybe there's one other genre of movie making that I've heard of that attracts a disproportionate number of people that both like it and seem to think they'd be good at making it, but that are terrible at making it.
Yeah.
And that's pornography. And I thought, well, maybe in the Venn diagram there's an overlap between, you know, horror fans and pornography fans. And so in the middle there, you get those people who...
Pornography.
Well, but what made me think that was that a lot of horror does have... like nudity is like a part of it.
Oh yeah.
You know, and sex, and the fact that the person who has sex first, all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a somehow the people who are attracted to pornography and the people who are attracted to horror, there's this shared group of people who, for whatever reason, they like the genre, think they'd be good at making this, but when they make one, they demonstrate that they have absolutely no understanding of how these things actually work. And it's a baffling kind of thing to me for someone to love something, to be so sure they can do it. I mean, for example, how can they love it when they so clearly don't truly even understand it? So I mean, right. I'm throwing all that at you. I know that's a lot.
No,
but...
and you're halfway there.
Okay, good.
Your theory is not bad.
Okay, okay.
But I'm going to tell you the truth of it okay. that I just came up with, but is absolutely how this works.
Okay, good, good.
So, you've heard me talk before. One of my favorite things about horror and the reason that I'm, one of the reasons I'm so into horror, although I think there's others. I keep thinking about it. And I think there's others that I haven't even figured out yet.
Okay.
Maybe I'm evil. Maybe that's what I don't know. But I do kill a lot of small animals after I see a good one. So
okay.
No. In a video game. No. So one of the things I really love is the transgressive nature of it. It's cathartic, but it also can explore a lot of things that a lot of other types of cinema or types of media won't explore.
And I'll argue that's a positive about the genre.
That's why I said it's a one
social
of the
and cultural
like.
Positive,
yes.
Yeah.
However, tied into that
mm-hmm.
is what makes it forbidden. Horror movies are the movies of the mainstream movies that people get pissed off about because they are transgressive. People protest a movie or won't let their kids see a movie that's horribly violent or it's horribly exploitative or it's bad. Not coincidentally, for this argument, pornography, same thing.
Sure.
Very transgressive, very, if not outright forbidden, very taboo, very
and can also be very, and can be also be very therapeutic and culturally valuable.
Yeah, well, and I think, yeah, there is something to that as well for a lot of people. Now, So that's how the groups come together a bit. But the other really big thing is because of this fact, specifically the social fact that both are considered restricted fringe elements in many people's eyes, forbidden or at least dangerous or whatever, they frequently are done independently.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
So they both have just grown up as independent things, low budget things,
sort of punk rock.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And of course, when you're doing low budget, you are limited in your ability. So you come up with, in a lot of cases, well, I'll put it this way: for an equally creative and intelligent mind, somebody with a lower budget film is probably going to have less luck making as good a quality of film.
Sure.
You can compensate for resource issues with a lot of creativity and smarts. But if you equalize that factor, lower budget means it's not going to be as good a quality.
There is also a lower bar for entry, though.
Yeah, the independent nature.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, so it becomes a cycle. Horror movies and porn are marginalized in society, therefore they are done independently, therefore they are frequently done without a lot of money, therefore not all of them, but a fair number of them come out kind of crappy.
Even if the person's would otherwise be really good at it.
Or maybe they're just a shitty... Well, no, here's the thing. The guy who makes the shitty horror movie that he loves, it's not that in another circumstance he'd be good. He sucks at it. If it was a different genre... He would never be allowed to make
it. Gotcha. That's that low bar of entry that I was
exactly.
talking about.
It's like,
yeah.
If it was just a drama, he would have to go to a studio. But horror movies, not only can you do that, because you could do that with a drama, it's expected. Like, a low-budget, shitty horror movie that was made in 2 weeks is the norm.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And can get a lot
gotcha.
Of coverage.
Here's another thing I started thinking about while you were talking.
And with porn, it's the exact same process.
Here's another thing I was thinking about while you were talking is... Maybe one of the things that attracts so many people who like it, who think they would be good at it, but demonstrate they have no clue how it even works,
mm-hmm.
is because something else that's an intersection between those two things is fetishes. And it could be a lot of people who enjoy horror movies like porn is they think everyone else enjoys it for the same reason they do, which is not for an interesting supernatural plot or anything like that, mm-hmm. but for the fetishistic aspects
yeah.
of it. So therefore, when they go to make a film and they just load it full of fetishistic stuff and they don't worry about the plot
yeah,
and stuff,
yeah.
they think it's great.
Sorry, this is a side point I meant to mention as well. With horror, and you could say it with porn. When you're saying it with porn, it's in air quotes and it makes you giggle. But in both cases, I think almost always the primary focus is spectacle.
Yeah.
And so, especially in a horror movie, the plot doesn't work, or the plot is derivative, or the twist is dumb. Who cares? Did you see that guy's spine get ripped out yeah. with that crescent wrench?
Did you see that the boobs? There was lots of boobs in there.
Because that was literally the point
of
the movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just mean because that director's an idiot. No, that's built into the genre.
Right.
And that's the cheap version, but frequently that's the thing. I mean, nowadays, you boil it down a little bit with horror movie and say, you can say, did it scare me? Or, you know, some other thing like that. But even then you're usually talking thriller. If you're talking horror, one of the first things people talk about is the level of gore.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll either say, this one is full of gore, you'll love it, or this one's full of gore, only if you're really into that should you watch this because it's so much. Or, this one is noticeable for being really good horror with very little gore. Or, this one sucked. It didn't even have any gore. Like these are the four most common things we'll hear.
But given all that, though, the horror genre is fairly broad. I mean, I've discovered recently that it's kind of unusual how much I like gothic horror.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I really did love reading Bram Stoker's Dracula. I really loved reading Jekyll and Hyde, and of course we all know Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I love that stuff, and there are a lot of modern things that might be called psychological thrillers or even supernatural thrillers that I enjoy that are in that same vein. But it's hard for me to call any of that horror. When I was growing up, horror was very much, you know, Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and stuff. Slasher movies, I guess they were called, and I still don't like that stuff.
No, and a lot of the stuff you're talking about, and this constantly shows up in reviews. They say it's less of a horror, more of a thriller, more of a mystery, or then you'd say psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. Maybe you say psychological horror, and then of course it's really annoying to me because you look, oh, what category is this movie in? And it says mystery, thriller, horror. I'm like, yeah, fuck you.
But I mean,
I'm like, oh, so you mean that the lights are low for
this
movie?
I was genuinely creeped out by Bram Stoker's Dracula. When I read it,
the book, okay.
Yeah, it really creeped me out. I thought this is good stuff, and I, like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein didn't creep me out, but it unsettled me, mm-hmm. you know, reading it, and the same thing with Jekyll and Hyde. I wouldn't say it creeped me out, but it unsettled me. And it's like, this is really good. And I can see why people would call it horror. And I can't really get into, like, Lovecraft very much. I don't know why. It just doesn't, his writing doesn't really resonate with me. But the ideas do fascinate me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it when people talk about them. And like, when they're in role-playing games or board games and stuff, that's fun. And all of that, I can understand why people would put that in the horror genre, but that seems like a far away from some of the stuff we've been watching.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
on Netflix.
Huge, but I mean, think about any of the romance genre.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
Pretty wide.
The sci-fi.
Yeah,
speculative fiction.
No,
genre.
Oh my gosh!
Huge,
yeah.
And of course, then we have drama, but you know, that's always been a catch-all anyway. Suddenly you're making me think of Forbidden Brides of the Faceless Slaves, that story. Because remember the whole thing where he's like, he's a classicist and he writes literature, but then he decided to go with fantasy and do genre fiction. Yeah. Check that out, people, if you haven't already. It's a Neil Gaiman short story. It's got a really long title, but the start of it is Forbidden Brides. Go from there. And we know it because I had this dream that we were going to do a live dramatic recitation of it at Halloween one year, and we never did. I never even figured out what the legal ramifications might be. but we got everybody together, and we just did read-throughs where people sweat.
It was very fun.
It was.
It was very fun.
We got a little silly, but it was a good time.
Yeah.
I remember the chink in the door made a lot of people laugh. Well, what was fun is because it is a comedic story in a lot of ways, but it's very dry and it's very slow build. So it was really fun to watch people, because nobody else in the room was familiar with it, and to watch them. We could do that again. I have another story in that same collection that would be a good one to read. I mean, nothing would come of it, and it's not horror, but it would be fun. We could do that. Not in here, clearly. But we're out of time. We didn't draw shit out of the hat. I'd feel bad about it, but we've done it before. And also, I feel like this was a good conversation. So, except, should have been last time.
I guess so.
For the Halloween one. So.
Well, I appreciate you letting me ask you that question because I was curious. You're like the one person I can ask.
I watched a ton of horror movies.
Jazz, I can ask
for a lot
like
of different reasons. And I'm always trying to figure. Well, I talk about this other thing. This is a thing. People and why I make people uncomfortable, especially you. I like discussing my sexual fetishes with people and with my and thinking about them with myself. That sounded weird, but I mean academically.
Okay.
Because I'm fascinated by where they come from.
Mm, yeah, sure. Sure.
And I've gotten to the point where I'm no longer like embarrassed that I'm going to find out where they come from and be like, oh my God, that's terrible.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So I'm pretty fine with it. But it's fun that sometimes I'm like, you know what? I can trace that to stuff when I was a kid or when I. And then there's some that I'm just like, I have no idea. Why would that even be?
Well, see,
and actually, just today, I read an article on Cracked. I should send it to you that a guy wrote about issues of sexual consent. It was basically in light of all the Trump scandal and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically talked about the reason why this is an issue and why the men aren't figuring it out is because here's how we've been indoctrinated our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it was new to me, but it was a very interesting read and it was kind of disconcerting and it was very easy to relate to. But the thing that fucked it up is it starts with Han and Leia's first kiss in Empire Strikes Back. Which, if you will recall, he pushes her against the wall. She says in many different ways that she's not
into that. That's right.
Physically tries to fight him off. He forces a kiss on her, and then eventually she decides she likes it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about like how intensely this showed up in all media, and he said, I can't even fill this up. Let me put it this way. I'm just going to tell you the history of this happening in Harrison Ford movies.
Mm.
And it was still huge.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, I've seen those. I remember that. Mm. I remember, like, so many bits that I'm course.
Yep. Very common. Very common.
I don't even know how I got onto that.
Well, we were talking about
talking about like my fetishes. And a lot of them you can find, if you have a certain fetish, you're like, oh, that's because the media did that to me when I was younger.
Not even necessarily
sexual assault ones, but I think, just other stuff. Like, that's been fetishized.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I think a lot of things in terms of that, though, it's kind of like dreams. A lot of dream material is coming from something. Yeah, I mean, your brain's just making stuff up, but it's not out of whole cloth usually.
Yeah.
There's something there. But sometimes something is kind of completely random,
well,
and it can grow into
stuff.
Yeah, it can grow into something else, yeah. And it can just be there for no particular reason.
I have a history throughout my adult life of dreams in which I am quite loudly and angrily fighting with my father, like yelling at him and stuff. And I have always assumed that there's sort of issues there. And with my upbringing, I can see some of that where that. Just recently, I realized my father might be a stand-in for just when I have other things that, like, I need to vent.
Sure.
Because I'm suddenly like, I think a lot of these have nothing to do with my dad. Because there would be ones that I'm like, I wouldn't argue with him about that.
No, but in your...
So I suddenly realized, I'm like, I'm not even sure this has anything to do with
my
dad.
Right, 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 right.
And I've been having this my whole life. And
right, but since he's an authority figure in your life, he's...
And he was a very angry guy, and I couldn't talk, I couldn't yell back.
Yeah, an easy person to put into that space. Yeah, that's right. The human mind is so complex when it comes to these things, and you really have to be open to being honest with yourself and exploring all aspects of this, and that includes being open about the things you're talking about with yourself and a trusted other sexual things or fetish things.
So, everybody go on the blog and tell us your sexual fetish.
I'll just not read those, maybe.
Oh, it'd be hilarious. if somebody starts, I'll do mine, and then William can never go back to the blog, and he'll never know what episode number it is, so nothing will have changed. Like us on Facebook, because somebody has to. Listen next week, because we'll be back. And then the week after that, we have to do double.
Do two, yep.
Because of Thanksgiving. And in the meantime, go watch Conan O'Brien Can't Stop, and maybe watch Scream in the Bikini. I don't know. Depends on how you feel about Walter Koenig.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.